This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. It's been less of a week than normal because we had off for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so that's always lovely when we get a little break. So that means I only worked a three-day week. I told a friend this week that, I could get used to this thing of not coming in on Mondays. I said, of course, I could get used to this thing of not coming in on Tuesdays either. But that's okay. Three and a half years. So we will do the job that is in our hand to do, and then we will go to the next thing. So all is well. Everything's puttering along at work. Didn't quite get as much done as I'd hoped this week, but got some really important things to do. So we are through all the end of year stuff. That was last week. And now, you know, we're doing all the start of year stuff. And I have a few little parts to play in that. And so got that done. And we talked strategy on some new tools and that kind of stuff. And working on some new forms and la-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that's all going fine. God is good. We're puttering along. Things are moving forward. There are a few little challenges here and there, but you know what? It's okay. We'll just take it a step at a time and respond as we can, and all is well. In other news, it is cold. It is cold. I think it was 10 when I left the house this morning. Which I know for some places in the country, that's no big deal, but that's cold for us. In fact, it's only 20 now. I think that's probably was the high for today. Tomorrow, it's going to be colder. So it's supposedly going to be in the single digits tomorrow, I think, which is very exciting because it will be, you know, National Polka Dot Day. I might be doing a little quickly walking from my car to whatever store or restaurant I'm going into. Because I normally don't wear heavy coats or anything like that because it just kind of messes up the vibe. So I will just briskly walk into the restaurants and back to my car and briskly walk into the Walmart. So, anyways, all is well there. As far as the costume stuff goes, it's all fine. I've got several things going simultaneously as far as the costumes go, because I, for instance, had to order some fabric I think I mentioned this on here, National Fairy Day, so I'm making a fairy costume. Turns out it's going to be like a woodland fairy costume. But I've just found some just gorgeous material. I mean, it's just ridiculously gorgeous. That will fit quite well with that, I think. And so this week I had to pause to figure out how much fabric I was going to need so I could order it from China so that when it takes 2 months to get here, you know, I'll have it in plenty of time to do that. And so I've got some experimentation that I need to do potentially this weekend. I'm still working on the angel wings, and frankly I need to really buckle down and start getting those done. But I have all the tutorials, I have the patterns, it's just a matter of just doing them. So I got to get that done, and I'm always fascinated at the creativity of people. It's just so fascinating. At this day and age, anything you want to find to do, you can. There's people giving tutorials, show you exactly how they do it, and yada yada. So, I had mentioned the crooked feather before. I did sign up and did a Patreon thing with her, because those mechanical feathers are very complicated. And then for this fairy day costume, I'd like to make some feathers for that as well. And I was looking at different techniques, and a lot of people have a lot of different techniques for it. But I actually found one lady who uses a Cricut, which my wife already has, to cut out a bunch of stuff. And I was like, hey, that's what I'm looking for. So, I need to see the list of supplies we have for that and then give that a try. And, you know, I mean, there's some really cool stuff that they do. And some of it comes out just looking very cool. So it'll be fun. And so I pretty much know, I still don't know what I'm doing with shoes on the, I don't know what I'm doing with shoes yet on the fairy costume. Although even as I say that now, I'm thinking, well, if I have a cricket and I have patterns, I could, you know, I'm percolating even as I say that. So, you know, maybe I know what we can do there. So that's good. Costumes, anything else? No, I did have one costume. I think I might have mentioned Love Your Robot Day. And I've decided to put that off until next year. So I'm going to pull out the Winnie the Pooh Be Kind costume for one more year. Because I discovered there's a National Comfy Day. It's like the 20th, I think, of February is National Comfy Day. And National Random Acts of Kindness Day, I believe, is the 17th. And then the whole week is considered National Acts of Kindness Week. So I'll do the Random Acts of Kindness there, and then we'll combine it with Comfy Day. And I got myself a blanket and a plush toy and some fluffy or some furry slippers. And so we'll just kind of make a little thing of it. It'll be fine. Yeah, so costumes are good. I'm pretty well squared away. I've got a little more work to do, a little bit of work to do on April Fool's Day. It is on a Friday today, so I'm going to do something a little special for that. Aside from that, we're locked and loaded, ready to go. It's National Polka Dot Day this week. So that's actually on the 22nd, June 22nd, which is Saturday. So that's always fun. Polka Dot Day is fun. So I think people will enjoy that. Had a lovely, lovely time last weekend. I got better response from Rubber Ducky Day than I had ever gotten before. And I think some of it had to do with the fact it was just such a dreary day. It was snowing and it was cold, and you know, it was really kind of the first snap that we've had this season, as I recall, where it's just kind of miserable. And so, you know, seeing some guy walk in and it's all orange and yellow and rubber duckies and stuff, it's just, I mean, one young lady was effusive enough that I don't know who she was, but apparently she has seen me before. Because when I saw her, she was grinning real big. She said, "You are the best human being I know." I said, "Well, thanks." So, you know, people were responding and we had fun. It was good. It was good. It's really lovely when you have an opportunity to just positively affect someone's life. So, yeah, it's good. It's an honor and it's a privilege to be able to do that. Even if some people get a little confused, that's okay. That's just fine. We're all in this experience together, and there will be times when people get confused. Anyways, so that's good. The writing, I think, is going fine. I think I have the turn now. I needed to come to a turn. I may have too much book to write for the amount of space that I have left, so I've got to figure out how to kind of trim down. But I think it's going to be fine. So I'm already on chapter 23. These usually just go to chapter 30-ish or so. But if this book goes a little long, it's not the end of the world either. So it is, you know, the end of the second set of eight. So if we have to take a little extra space, we can certainly do that. So yeah, the writing is going fine. I'm right where I need to be. I'm a few words behind this week, but I can feel I'm in the slot. So I'm good on that. So I think it's going to be fine. I just have to actually make it. You know, I've got all the pieces. that I want to do, and I just have to kind of figure out how dramatic we want to get with this, which I think we're going to get pretty dramatic by the time it's all said and done. And kind of, yeah. It's fun. It's just fun. You know, I have driven over a branch that is in my driveway several times. I'm just going to get this real quick. Sorry about that. Like I said, I had driven over that branch multiple times. And as long as I was here, we might as well take care of it. Anyways, so all is well. I came across a little article that these kinds of things always perk my ears a little bit. One moment, getting my mail. The name of the article was, "Our Fondness for Narratives is Driving Us Mad." And I checked. I didn't find that I had talked about this before. But it's interesting because our lives here, and Jordan Peterson talks about this as well, our lives here really resonate with narratives, stories. I mean, it's one of the reasons I love being a storyteller, because there is a depth of resonance in telling stories. And Jesus used stories to illustrate points and to drive home truths. And what's really fascinating about Jesus' stories when it comes to things like the parables is that you think you've got the information of what Jesus is talking about there. You think you have it under control and that you understand what he's saying. But then when you dig in, all of a sudden you begin to see, wait a minute, there is this little turn of a phrase there that I've missed or I haven't paid any attention to. And yet, if you really think about that little turn of the phrase, all of a sudden, it means something different than you thought it meant. There's an augmentation of some sort simply because of that little turn of a phrase. And that's a really fascinating thing, that you can take a story and just by how you augment certain parts of that story with just a qualifier, it can change the tone of the whole story. And so that, you know, story is a really, really interesting thing. And at the beginning of this article, they talk about our fondness for narratives, but I think it's far, far deeper than just a fondness. I think there is a foundational element to story and to narrative that really crafts the tenor, the attitudes, the atmosphere of our lives. And so we have to really pay attention to the stories that we're telling ourselves. I think one of the things that is lost in much of the woke ideology and much of the critical race theory and those types of things is that the stories that we tell ourselves profoundly affect how we relate in life. And if we choose stories that disable us, that disempower us, even if we call them empowering stories, if in fact they disempower us and disable us, we give ourselves a much harder place in life to navigate through when we don't have stories that are enabling stories. And some of that has to do with the character of the story itself. And of course, some of that has to do with our interaction mentally with the story, because we easily can see examples of people who have the same story, the same life story. I mean, one of my examples I talk about a lot is someone who is unjustly convicted of a crime. sent to jail, in jail for 2 decades, and then exonerated. You will, as you research those stories, find some who will come out of jail grateful and will say, if I hadn't gone to jail, I would have died because of the path that I was on. And you will find others in very, very similar situations that will be bitter and bitter for the rest of their lives. And the difference really is the story within them that they're telling themselves. So just real quickly, this article was titled, "Our Fondness for Narratives is Driving Us Mad." And the subtitle was, "We seem to be in a golden age of storytelling. Is it inhibiting rather than creating empathy?" So he starts off the article talking about the fact that we're living inside a digitally driven big bang of storytelling, a stunning expansion of the universe of stories across all genres and mediums. A 2020 Nielsen study reported that the average Americans now consume a whopping 12 hours of media per day, much of it in narrative form, including hours upon hours of fiction. Now that we have more storytelling than ever, has empathy increased apace? Are we doing a better job of understanding each other's ancient divides, understanding each other across ancient divides of race, class, gender, religion, and political orientation? If stories have such sunny effects, why has the big bang of storytelling coincided with an explosive growth of hostility and polarization rather than harmony and connection? Well, there's a reason for that. It says, first, the good news. Well-publicized studies have shown that empathy is a bit like a muscle. The more we flex it, that muscle by consuming fiction, the more it swells. Research conducted around the world has repeatedly found that merely watching television shows or listening to radio dramas featuring diverse protagonists reduces a variety of viewer prejudices with more power and durability than do conventional approaches to prejudice reduction like diversity training. Moreover, in an age of furious polarization, a 2021 study in the Proceedings of Natural Academy of Sciences shows that humble personal anecdotes can bridge fraught moral and political divides, even when factual information can't. And so that's all, you know, this process of humanization. For instance, I came out of my major client today. I'm walking towards my car. I hear a younger man say, "Is this the door to the bank?" And I turned around, African-American gentleman. And I said, "Bank?" I said, "This is an office building right here." He said, "So," and then I thought, wait, he's looking for the credit union. I said, "Are you looking for the credit union?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Oh, it's down this alley. It's just behind those couple of buildings." And so then he said, "Oh, okay, I turned too soon for the GPS." I said, "Yeah, it's just right over there. It's over those buildings. You know, you can get to it there." And then I said, "Do you have a car? Or you get?" "Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, I have a car." I said, "Okay, because if you were walking, it's very cold and I would take you down." No, that's thanks. Okay, so by making a habit, as I have, of greeting people of color consistently. "Hi, how are you today?" The stories that I have in my mind, no matter if it's a white guy or a person of color, and obviously, and honestly, it's better with people of color than the white guy. I don't necessarily expect that white guys are going to greet me back, because a lot of my costumes and those kind of things, when I'm greeting white guys, most of the time they just grunt and keep walking by me. You know, a lot of the older white guys, which is fine. That's fine. But I have found in costumes and or just in normal life that when I greet people of colors, "Hi, how are you today?" I will normally, "Good. How are you today?" "Good. Have a great day." You know, and so there's always this expectation. There's this story that I tell myself that if I greet someone, I am one greeting away from a smile and a cordial little interaction. So that's my story when it comes to that. And it works out real well. And he was a very kind young man and appreciative for the offer for a ride. But he had a car, and he didn't seem to take an offense at all that I thought he might not have a car. But he was standing out there all by himself and there were no cars around. So he understood that. And we were all good. All is well because of the stories. Now, if I had imagined that he was there casing the building, if I had imagined that they was there trying to get in, if I had imagined, well, now he's going to try to hit me up to get him, blah, 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 without actually talking to him, I would have come away from that encounter much differently. And so in encountering people, in exchanging greetings with people, in talking with people, we do develop a much different attitude and a much different empathy than just seeing people from afar. And so from those perspectives, story really can help us. However, there is some bad news as well, because when we tell stories, classical stories, we tend to have a good guy and a bad guy. And if all the bad guys are of a certain genre, we can generate a unit of callousness, as they say in the article, for every unit of empathy. The act of generating empathy can also produce empathy's inverse, a kind of moral blindness to humanity's, to the humanity of whoever is forced into the villain's role. Fiction, as Fritz Breithaupt explains in his book, The Dark Side of Empathy, conjures not just empathy, but empathetic sadism, which he defines as the emotional or intellectual enjoyment that most people feel in situations of altruistic punishment. For example, when the hero kills or captures or humiliates the villain. I mean, I personally heard a thing years ago about this guy's fantasy of having time travel and being able to go back, and what he would do to Hitler if he was able to go back. And it's horrific. It is just horrific. And the fact that this man is telling this story of what he would do to Hitler and the horrific things, it just shocked me the first time I heard the TED Talk, because I thought, A, why would you admit that? And B, why would you want to do that? Because there is this, I'm so empathetic for all of the victims that I am going to set myself up as the righteous judge, and I am going to impart on you judgment. And I try to stay away from that idea that I'm out here and I'm going to impart on other people's judgment, impart on them judgment, because... Yeah, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. It is true that as we watch these stories, if we're not careful, that we can take these stories of good and evil and remap them into our lives and start casting people in the role of evil. And so this author's solution to that is that we need more morally ambiguous stories. And I'm just going to wrap it up here because this has already gone long. That we need more morally ambiguous story. He quotes Jonathan Frazen as saying, moral ambiguity has emerged as a central principle in serious fiction. So, if you write serious fiction, you're supposed to write about moral ambiguity. But that way you're not supposedly participating in this thing where you show a good and a bad, and therefore the evil, the villain is bad, and you transfer that over into your life as to whoever you consider a villain is evil. But the article goes on to say, the irony is that by stripping away the caricatured villains from our political narratives and embracing the principle of moral ambiguity, we can make our stories of reality not only as empathic and socially productive as great fiction, perhaps even as, but perhaps even as true. So, you know, obviously this guy is purporting that we just need to write fiction that is more ambiguous in terms of our morality. And, you know, my response to that is, nope, no, I don't think that's what we need. I mean, I think we do need fiction that allows us to understand the motives and characteristics of our characters. I like to write characters that are not just one-dimensional, but they have real motivations, and they have understandable motivations, and they make mistakes. But I certainly am not a fan of just doing morally ambiguous things. I am a fan of seeing people reap the results of whatever their chosen path is in life. That, you know, we don't get off scot-free for just being ugly and evil to people, because that ugly and evilness is within us. It's not necessarily a part of our external circumstances. And I think that's one of the things that's missing in this story, that this, or in this article, is that just changing the stories to where they're morally ambiguous is not necessarily going to lead to a better outcome, because the driver of the bad outcomes has nothing, is not really the story. It is not the fact that there is good and bad in the story that causes people then to reach for behavior where they're classifying everybody as good and bad and treating the bad people really bad. That mechanism, that engine, that driver, for me, is the flesh. And so if you give the flesh morally ambiguous stories, that's not necessarily going to solve anything, because then the flesh will just use that moral ambiguity to drive their human into more destruction by convincing him there is no right or wrong. You know, so you, no matter what you do, the flesh is going to find a way to turn it. And so it's not, I don't necessarily see the stories so much as a problem as people just not being aware of the destructiveness that is within them that needs to be addressed. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.